Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are. With Dan Z, the podcast you're looking for. This is... Yes.
Previously on Coffee with Kenobi.
He's like Yoda, an immovable spot, but then he's also sacrificing himself by the tree, you know, and on a rock. And on the rock, I build this church. You know, it's so Eastern and Western myth. It's just perfect myth.
So I guess the show's pretty much done. You've pretty much nailed everything. That's pretty good.
Okay, that's all right. So I'll take a bases loaded home run right off the screen.
That was a base loaded home run.
This is Vanessa Marshall, Harrison Dula from Star Wars Rebels, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
Din and Lindsay really nailed so many key points about The Last Jedi that are so powerful, and that is another reason why I love doing this show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Coffee with Kenobi, show number 155. We are your spoiler-free place for Star Wars discussion, analysis, rhetoric, and the best travel tips this side of the galaxy. I'm your host, Dan Z, drinking One Nation coffee, and no, I'm not drinking out of that red Star Wars Christmas coffee mug. I was tempted to because this is the season, but in honor of tonight's show, I am drinking out of a Skywalker Ranch Fire Department coffee mug. It has a picture of the Millennium Falcon on it. Seemed appropriate because we were going to talk about Solo, a Star Wars story. Coffee with Kenobi is brought to you by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. For all of your travel needs to the Disney theme parks and the cruise lines, as well as anywhere you want to go on vacation, be sure to go to www.milesfantravel.com, the official travel agency of Coffee with Kenobi. On Coffee with Kenobi, I invite you to join me as we think about the mythology of Star Wars in a whole new way, and maybe laugh a little bit in the process. You are here with your Star Wars family as we go to our favorite coffee shop and talk Star Wars. On today's show, Dennis Keith Lee and Lisa Dullard join us as again we talk about our top 5 things we love about Solo, a Star Wars story. So pull up a chair, grab your favorite coffee mug, and let's have some coffee with Kenobi. Before we jump into the program, I want to give a special thank you to Columbia Sportswear for the Star Wars Empire Crew parka they were kind enough to give to me as we covered everything from Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago and the release last week of the Star Wars Empire Crew parka. It is a gorgeous, incredible jacket. I know you've seen it online, and I'm going to have some more photos on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook of the jacket. It's warm, it's comfortable, and of course, it's got that iconic flair of those things we love about the making of The Empire Strikes Back from Norway. It's such a great thing. Thank you again to Columbia for giving me one of those jackets. Now, let's jump into the program.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first?
Joining us today for a cup of coffee are two of my favorite people in the Star Wars universe. First, let's bring in Lisa Dullard, who is, of course, our CWK media specialist and the senior editor of Coffee with Kenobi.
Hello.
Hello. Are you excited to be on the show?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Good. Well, you have certainly been making the podcast rounds talking about Solo, so we have to, of course, have you on for this one. I mean, was there ever been a doubt in your mind when I started going through all the cinematic films that you were going to be on for Solo?
I had a feeling.
Yeah, the force is strong with you, I guess.
Exactly.
Exactly. Also joining us on the show is the co-host of Starships, Sabers, and Scoundrels, a writer for CWK, and a really fantastic guy, Mr. Dennis Keithley.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Lisa. It's great to be back on Coffee with Kenobi, and I'm super excited to talk about Solo, and not in the least bit surprised that Lisa is on this episode.
No. No, this is going to be a blast. Well, and as we've been doing, you know, it's scenes, moments, it's memories, it's collectibles, it's anything that you want to say about this wonderful film. And this is kind of bittersweet because this is the last top 5 of the cinematic movies, of course, because this is the 10th Star Wars film, which seems so strange that there are, in fact, 10 Star Wars films. But we don't get another one for another year, so we're going to have to come up with a lot of top 5s between now and then, among other things. But I think we're going to be able to do that. So this is a great way to celebrate Solo, a Star Wars story. Lisa, we will start with you. What is the first one you have on your list?
Can I just say how perfect it is that Solo is the 10th, as in like the perfect 10?
Oh, nice.
So nice.
Had you just thought of that?
I just thought of that.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's so appropriate.
Yeah. Well.
Right. Well, let's see. I know these top fives don't have to be in order.
No, whatever you want.
But my number one is actually my number one when it comes to Solo, and that is Alden Ehrenreich. I think that Alden did a truly spectacular job stepping into what had to be an almost impossible situation. I can't even imagine, you know, the trepidation or the hesitation or anything that he had going into filling Harrison Ford's shoes. And I give him a lot of credit for his bravery and his hard work. And also I want to talk about how can I word this? For 40 years of being a Star Wars fan, you know, I'm 50, so I've been here since the very beginning. Harrison's always meant a lot to me. I love Harrison Ford. But Han Solo, I never really cared about. He just was a character who was there, you know, okay, all right, well, you're great. There's Han Solo. Fantastic. I never really cared. And even to the point of The Force Awakens, when Han meets his end at the hands of his son, that really had no effect on me. And I know that sounds terrible. I should have cared, and I didn't. I didn't. I was like, okay, you know, well, that's pretty sad, but you know, next scene, I didn't. It didn't
part of the narrative. Yeah,
it didn't have any emotional impact on me at all. And when I left the theater, I didn't dwell on it. And I had a lot of friends who were very upset that Han Solo was dead. And I was like, well, I kind of kept my mouth shut because I didn't want to tick anybody off. But after seeing Solo, the first time I saw The Force Awakens after seeing Solo, and I'd seen Solo a couple times at that point, the first time I saw that scene, I cried like a baby. It was just the floodgates opened and I was very emotional. I was sitting here at home watching and I thought, my goodness, where did all this come from? And why didn't I feel this in 2015? So it's just the power of Solo, just in my life, can't be understated. And a lot of that has to do with what Alden was able to accomplish, with the smart choices that he made as an actor, with the way that he was able to embody the character in his own way, but still have him feel familiar, you know, to what we meet eventually, you know, 10 years down the road in Star Wars time. And just, it was amazing. And I've, because of that, I'm able to mourn Han Solo's loss. It gets a little bit easier watching that scene because I've watched The Force Awakens a number of times since then, but it's never a pleasure to watch it or.
Sure. You
know, it's really, that's why I get a little annoyed when people say that that the movie wasn't necessary or it doesn't really matter or anything like that. And I think, nah, you don't know the impact that it had on some people like me. And I'm sure I'm not the only person out there that's experienced this. So
no. And you've been so good about waving the flag that people are coming out on Twitter and Facebook and other places and expressing similar pathos for this film. And I think that is so, I mean, there's nothing I think that Ron Howard or Alden Ehrenreich could want to hear more than the fact that this film impacted how you view Han Solo throughout the rest of the saga. I think that's incredible. I think that's so spot on, and it very much shows how important Alden was to this role, which is what I'm certainly going to talk about in a little bit. Dennis, what do you have for your first one?
Well, let me first say that I completely agree with Lisa there. Han Solo was my favorite character from the original trilogy, so it was important that they get that casting right. And I was very thrilled.
I knew that was your favorite one. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Han's always been my favorite from the original trilogy. But so I was really thrilled that they got that one right. As for my first item, I actually wrote about this for my last blog with Coffee with Kenobi, and that's the Convex scene, which is, of course, the heist scene. And it's a bit of a throwback to the old Western train heist. I'd have got a lot of things to say about it, and I couldn't even fit them all in that blog I did. There's just so many things that happened there. One, you know, something that's inconsequential. You get the range troopers there, which I thought was criminal that they got as little screen time as they did because they were just an incredible design for stormtroopers. We get the introduction of Enfys Nest in that scene. And she comes charging in with the Cloud Riders on their swoop bikes. And it's a great entrance. You get some fantastic scenes of Han and Chewbacca working together as they're trying to disable the coupling that's keeping the cars and the Convex. The design of the Convex is just fantastic, with cars that are both above and below the track. And then you get the character deaths of Val and Rio, and how important that is to Beckett, and how much that sets up the rest of the film. Overall, it's just a great scene from start to finish. It's got great action, great music, and some really well-paced beats throughout that set up a lot of things that come farther in the movie.
I'm glad you brought up your blog too, because that was a great piece of writing. It was cool. And it made me think about that scene a little more differently too. I've certainly said a few times, the movie doesn't really start for me until Han and Chewie click. For some reason, for some reason, I don't know what, I can't even explain why. That just, it made it a different place for me. My first one is similar to Lisa's, a little bit different, but a similar concept. And that is the ability of Alden Ehrenreich to make me forget about Harrison Ford. I'm a Luke Skywalker guy. I've always loved Han, especially in The Empire Strikes Back. I think that's where the most powerful of him in the Harrison Ford era is. And I think it's probably a lot of people would agree with that. But I knew that I wanted to accept Alden because I knew he was a good actor. In a similar vein to Heath Ledger as the Joker or Michael Keaton as Batman, I know that a good actor can make any role work because that's what they do. That is their craft. That is their gift. So I knew it was a big deal. I try not to think about it too much because I have such a great affinity for Harrison Ford, like the two of you. But then I saw that very first trailer. I think it was the Super Bowl, right? The teaser.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so striking to me, the way they put the shadows on his face and the candor of his voice. And I just thought, oh, this is going to be great. He's going to be awesome. And then when I saw the film for the first time, about halfway through, I thought to myself, oh my gosh, not once have I thought about Harrison Ford. And that's incredible. That is an incredible feat, really a Herculean feat when you consider, you know, that Harrison Ford is one of the great actors of our generation, of our time. And he'll go down in history as one of the great leading men with all the iconic roles he's done. And then to take that role, arguably, I would say Indiana Jones is probably his most significant role, Han Solo being second. But the fact that he can take Han Solo and make it his own, but still give love and homage to Harrison Ford, and they can complement one another, is great. It's so much so that I'm still annoyed that Hasbro didn't release a 3¾-inch Han Solo figure of Alden Ehrenreich on the actual Solo card. I'm not talking about the legacy or the legend. I don't understand that. That, in fact, I asked Hasbro about that at San Diego Comic-Con, and they seem surprised too. So who knows what happened there? But I digress. That's my number one.
You know, what sold me on Alden in this role was one of the early trailers when Kira says to him, it's like, I'm the only one in this galaxy that may know who you truly are. And he has that response of, you know, and what's that? And he does that smirk. Mm-hmm. And it captured a lot of the Han Solo that Harrison Ford brought. And it wasn't so important to me that they got somebody that sounded and acted exactly like Harrison Ford. They just needed someone that could carry forth that swagger. And they nailed it.
Yeah, he did very well capturing the mannerisms. And even though he didn't, you know, he doesn't look like Harrison Ford, he doesn't sound like Harrison Ford, but there were times he was very Harrison Ford as Han Solo. I mean, there are times where I can see it very clearly, and I wonder why there are people who don't see it. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. And you were talking, Dan, also about it was important to you that they get the character right because you love Harrison Ford so much. I brought one of the viewings of mine, I think it was the fifth time I saw Solo, I brought a friend of mine who loves Harrison Ford, and Han Solo is her favorite character as well. And she was very skeptical about, she didn't even want to go see Solo. And I said, no, come on, it's on me. We're going to go see it together. You're going to love it. Trust me. And we sat there. See, trust me. See, that's Han Solo right there. It's like she was Chewy and there was me saying, trust me. And she was sitting there and I was watching her face kind of, you know, at the beginning where he's trying to hotwire the speeder and whatnot. And she was sold from the beginning. I mean, there was no doubt in her mind that that was Han Solo. She bought him hook, line, and sinker from the start. So,
and even more is when I knew that Alden was going to be in it, I didn't want to see, like you both said, I didn't want to see a Harrison Ford impersonator.
Right.
I just wanted to see Han Solo. And I saw Han Solo, and that's a very unique cocktail, that, mm-hmm. that particular character. So that's great. Lisa, what's your second one?
My second one is John Powell's score for Solo. I love it. I've listened to nothing else since May.
Not honestly, even Bing Crosby?
Not even Bing Crosby. Oh. I haven't listened to any Christmas music yet this year.
Oh, my goodness. This is serious.
Yeah, I need an intervention or something, I think. I've only listened to the score for Solo, and I absolutely, and most of the time I listen to music when I'm in a car, so it's not like I'm listening to Solo as I'm wandering around the house 24. I just listen to music when I'm in the car, and I'm not in the car all that much. But yeah, when I am, that's what I'm listening to. And I love the music. I love that John Powell was able to take a lot of John Williams themes and blend them seamlessly with new music that he composed for the film. So it's a wonderful, like, in particular with Reminiscence Therapy.
Yes.
With the Asteroid Chase music and you know, the new stuff that John Powell composed around it is just absolutely stunning. And also John Williams, his little homage to Han with his Adventures of Han that kicks off the score that sadly we don't really hear in the movie. John Powell adapts a lot of that to his own themes throughout the film. But I do love listening to that, and I love that that John Williams made it not just about Han Solo, but it seems like it's an homage to Han throughout Han's life. But it's also kind of an homage to Harrison Ford, I think, because there's a lot of, like, it feels very Indiana Jones in some ways, too.
Yeah.
it's kind of neat. So sort of, I look at it as an homage to not only the character of Han Solo, but also to Harrison Ford himself. So I like that.
That's a good song to drive to, too, by the way. When you're in and out of traffic, that is the song. I definitely can vouch for that.
Yeah, and Corellia Chase, I'm surprised it hasn't got me pulled over yet. I think the only reason it hasn't is because I'm driving a four-door sedan and you can't really go that fast.
There you go.
But Corellia Chase just gets me going. But yeah, I love the score. And they just announced yesterday that the score has been disqualified from the Oscars.
What?
It was submitted. The deadline for submission was November 15th, and they missed the deadline. So the score for Solo can't be considered for, you know, an Oscar nomination, which really...
They can't even find a host, but they eliminate this? That doesn't
sound... Yeah, it sort of ground my gears yesterday when I went into a little rant on Twitter about that. But yeah, so that's... But no, but the score for Solo is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
You know, the Spotify sent me my top 100 songs of the year that I listened to, and three tracks from Solo made my top five. That was actually going to be my second item, was the score as well. And I'll just make two quick points on that. Marauders Arrive is one of my favorite Star Wars tracks of the past couple of years. And second, John Powell is one of my favorite composers for films outside of John Williams. And if you listen to the How to Train Your Dragon soundtrack, this, and then A New Hope, it makes a fantastic transition from Powell to Williams.
Yeah, he's wonderful. Oh, and I don't know if you guys saw that Mind Mission is nominated for a Grammy for John Williams and John Powell for their collaboration on Mind Mission from Solo. So at least it's got a Grammy nomination.
Yeah.
You know, so that's something.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah, it's nice. My second one it's basically kind of three parts in one, but it'll make sense. It's when the Falcon is first revealed for the very first time, and he gazes upon that thing with the way it's lit and sitting in there, you know, waiting for them to get on after they first meet Lando. And then when Han first walks into the cockpit, and the third of this little trifecta is when Chewie and Han first take the controls together. All three of those moments, every time I see the movie, goosebumps, goosebumps, goosebumps. Because the Falcon is so important to me. This wonderful ship that is not a character is so amazing and awe-inspiring to me. It's such an iconic piece of what Star Wars is. And, you know, Han and Chewie are just synonymous with that ship. And it just means so much to me that it means so much to them. And we get to see the impetus of that. And I've always said becoming is more interesting than being. And I really just, I just love that they made that a love letter to this wonderful hunk of junk that's the fastest in the galaxy.
I was wondering how long it was going to take us to get to the Falcon character argument.
I feel wonderful restraint. Yeah. I'm debating doing a blog about it, but I want to. Eric did such a great piece on the Falcon for Coffee with Kenobi, and I want to let that sit out there for a while because he did such a great job with that. So we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll get to the next two things we love about Solo, A Star Wars Story. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is the perfect time to thank our CWK Patreon family member contributors. And I'm talking about people like Rebecca Raven, Dennis Keithley, Terry Lee, Ben Elkington, Melinda Wolf, Wayne Booker, Aaron Harris, Chris Gavarka, Angela Sauce, Mediocre Jedi, Caroline Maselli, Tim Bungaroth, Chris Metz, LJ Souter, Thea Selby, Jeff Ellis, Daz Davies, Christian Dale, Jason Hall, Brian McKinney, Connie Shee, Mike Audette, Jared Cantor, BJ Smith, Eric Struthers, Nick Deco, and Mark Suter. These members of our Coffee with Kenobi family have access to CWK Pour Over, which is our weekly exclusive podcast that comes out every Sunday around 7 or 8 in the morning. And it's on Coffee with Kenobi's Patreon page. And you can listen to myself, Corey Club, and Tom Gross talk about all kinds of Star Wars comic book and pop culture topics. We have a blast doing so. And here is a clip from last week's show. We talk about Die Hard as a Christmas movie or whether it isn't a Christmas movie, as well as some of our favorites and just getting excited for the holiday season. And then I find out something startling about a movie that Corey hasn't seen. Here's the clip. It was focused on, is Die Hard a Christmas movie or not? Before we get to that, though, I think we need to, let's just give a general idea of what a Christmas movie is to us and some of our favorite Christmas movies that we just have to watch each holiday season.
I mean, a Christmas movie should involve something that deals with the Christmas spirit in my mind. So yeah. Like it's a Wonderful Life, even though it's not necessarily about Christmas, the setting is there, but there is, you know, there's the angel aspect. There's the, every time a bell rings, an angel earns its wings, you know, it's on that Christmas Eve. It's desperation. It's loss of hope, regained hope, all in that Christmas time period. And it has a lot of those themes. So I feel like that is a legit Christmas movie. I mean, that just screams.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. Oh boy. So that, why Christmas? You know,
Christmas, and those are three really traditionals around our house.
If you don't get weepy at the end of either White Christmas or Miracle on 34th Street, you're probably dead inside.
I've never seen White Christmas.
What?
Yeah, wow.
Okay. Oh, boy. So that, why Christmas?
You
going
to unfriend me now?
No, I'm excited because I can introduce you to a whole new world. I'll bring the carpet over.
That's Aladdin, though, right?
That's true.
That's not a Christmas
White movie. Christmas is one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time, of any Ooh. Genre. I honestly think that's the thing I love so much about hitting record and talking to these two every week on CWK Pour Over, because these are the kind of conversations we have, whether their microphone is on or not. It just so happens that these conversations are about pop culture topics that we love to chat about. And hey, the Christmas season, talking about these movies, still can't believe Corey hasn't seen White Christmas. I actually just watched it again last weekend with my family, so we got to get him on the White Christmas Bing Crosby train. So be sure to tweet to him and remind him of that. I think that will be great fun. So anyway, if you want to be a CWK Patreon contributor and listen to CWK Pour Over each and every week, it's $5 a month. You have access to our entire back catalog as well as upcoming shows that we do. And again, they're once a week on Sundays and they are great fun. If that's not all that a CWK Patreon member can be a part of, you can get t-shirts, coffee mugs, phone cases, and so many more great things out there, be sure to go to www.patreon.com/coffeewithkenobi to sign up today so you have access to CWK Pourover and you can help support Coffee with Kenobi. I cannot thank you enough for supporting this show or for even considering it. If you have any questions, just let me know or go to the button at the top of our webpage, www.coffeewithkenobi.com. And be sure to go to www.onenationcoffee.com while you're at it to get the finest coffee in the galaxy. It tastes amazing and smells even better. On onenationcoffee.com, you can sign up for a coffee subscription so you never miss out on the best coffee out there. I know I can't go a single morning without it. It is the best. Be sure to go to www.onenationcoffee.com today and enter the code KENOBI10 to get 10% off your first order. We are back. We are on our third thing that we love about Solo, a Star Wars Story. Lisa, we're back to you.
Okay, my third kind of is in the middle of like where your second was. My third is my favorite moment from the movie. My favorite moment is not when Han first sees the Falcon, but is when he first sees the Falcon go into hyperspace. So you see, he's been talking to Lando, and L3 comes in. She kicks him out of her seat. They sit down. Han sits down right behind L3. They put the Falcon into hyperspace. The camera pans from the back of Lando and L3, slowly pans over to Han's profile, and the look on his face, the smile with the beautiful, the lights flashing on him, the gorgeous lighting of the scene, it's just beautiful. And that smile that he has, that is just, he's in love. He's found the love of his life in this ship.
Yeah.
And I also, that scene, and sort of encapsulates for me how the movie makes me feel. Like, I feel like when I'm watching that film that I've got that grin on my face the whole time. And I actually, at one point, on my 10th viewing of Solo, I thought it was going to be my last because all my theaters were dropping it and I was starting to panic. It's like, well, this is going to be my last chance to see this movie. Turned out it wasn't, obviously. But I actually, when that scene, I knew that scene was coming. I snuck my iPad out of my purse and I snapped a picture of it. Just so I could.
I listen to this part.
Just so I could. I didn't record anything. I didn't do anything.
I'm just kidding.
I had to take a little picture of the screen. I made sure I wasn't bothering anybody in the theater or anything like that. But it was just a real click, click the picture, and it made me very happy. But I love that moment. I live for that moment every time I watch the movie.
Isn't it wonderful looking at the behind-the-scenes stuff, how they filmed that and actually brought in a stunt coordinator so they would get an idea of what that would feel like and putting that screen in the front to make it look like they're actually going into hyperspace. I thought that was incredible.
And the actors didn't know they were going to do that.
Yeah.
So the first time that they went in hyperspace. That was the first time the actor, I mean, they thought they were just going to see like a blue screen or whatever in front of them. But when they actually saw the lights, like they all started freaking out. So it's really very cool. I love that moment.
Dennis, what is your next one?
My next one is the introduction to Corellia. This is a planet that Star Wars fans have known about a lot through the old Legends novels and comics and things. I remember playing the old Star Wars Galaxy MMO RPG online, for years, and went off as a visit, and it was always this wooded world that had cities popping up every once in a while. But, just getting an opportunity to see it on film finally, because it's kind of legendary as Han's home.
Yeah.
And then when we finally get there, it's polluted. And then we get all these shipyards all over the place with these Star Destroyers being constructed. And then we learn a little bit more about that gangs have taken over the place with the Scrum Rats and the White Worms and everything else that's going on there. And so getting an opportunity to see this world that's been such a big part of Star Wars literature for so long that had never been on screen for anything finally was kind of a neat treat. Even just watching Han and Kira race from their hideout with the White Worms to the spaceport and evade Moloch and then the biker scout, I guess, on a speeder. It was just a fun scene. It was a there's a lot of great world building in this movie. And in a couple minutes, they did a lot of that right there on Corellia very efficiently.
That was another one that was a daunting thing because you're taking these things. It's not in the same vein as the Clone Wars, but it has been out there for a long time. I mean, Corellia isn't even mentioned in the films, but mm-hmm. we know it's there because we're Star Wars fans and we've read the expanded universe and we're just very familiar with these characters. So to finally get it, and the fact that they took the kind of the Charles Dickens approach, that made me very, very happy. In fact, I didn't put that as an honorable mention, but I should have. We'll just pretend. So my third one is Han and Chewie's banter, their interactions, and the bond they share. We really see how they earn one another's respect. I really liked, and I mentioned this on the review of the Blu-ray, but I really liked the sequence of how they met in that, as they were wrestling in that mud. I liked what they did with that on the deleted scene because I feel like they added a little more context and it showed the warmth and the respect they have right away instead of it being so violent and aggressive. And I just found that magic. The way that Chewie will just say things under his breath that we don't really know what he's saying, but we know what he's saying. Similar to when R2-D2 talks, I think, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it makes you smile because of that love they have for one another. And, you know, not if you round down or whatever, you know, that's a round up. It's just so funny. Lisa, what's the line on that one?
Not if you round down, buddy.
Yep, that's right. We round down, buddy. Yeah, I missed the buddy part. I knew you'd seen it a little bit more than I have, so I knew you would be the person to ask. It's just, how can you not love that? The banter, comedy, most of comedy is timing. And, you know, when you say it, and those two have it down so beautifully. And that's one, when he's playing Sabacc, the way they fight together, you know, as a team, as a tandem, is kind of a dynamic duo in their own right. And I just think they're fantastic. And to be honest, and I don't mean to shake the sacrosanct branch of the Star Wars tree, but Yunus Suetamo and Alden Ehrenreich, their chemistry is, I don't know that it's better than Harrison's and Peter Mayhew's, but there's just something fresh about it. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if it's the eyes or what, but it's just, I don't know. It's great. It's great. Lisa, what's your fourth one?
Let me see. Well, my fourth one, let me see. Because your three kind of went into my four here. So let me rearrange here so we're not still talking about Han and Chewie. Let me see. I would say,
you can for sure, whatever you want, because you'll have a different spin.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'll go with mine, my Han and Chewie thing, because it is a little different than yours. I sort of went with the, you know, there was always this idea that Chewbacca had a life debt to Han Solo. And clearly the film does away with the concept of a life debt. And I was really happy that they did that because I never really cared for the idea of a life debt. Like Chewie's just sort of hanging around Han because he has to. It never sat right with me. And I don't even know where it was. And I don't know that it was ever quote unquote canon because I know the EU is not canon anymore.
It never was.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's
ever.
True.
Yeah.
But it was just, I'm not even sure where it originated from. I mean, was it in a book? I don't remember ever reading that there was actually a life debt. Certainly never mentioned in the films. But everybody just seemed to accept that there was, and I never really cared for it. So I like how in the film, it's made clear that they choose to be with one another. And there are several instances in the film where you can see Chewbacca kind of study Han. There are these little moments where he's watching Han. And you almost get this idea that he's sort of sizing him up and he's reaches the conclusion that, you know, this is a good guy. Like Kira says, Han is the good guy. And Chewie decides to throw his lot in with him. And the two of them go off together as equals, not as, you know, Han's lording something over him because he saved his life or anything like that. I just love that. They're best friends and they're equal in the relationship. And that sits a lot better with me than, you know, Chewie's just kind of there. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally does.
Yeah, I once wrote a blog about that very thing, how much it bothered me that there was a life debt. Mm-hmm. And I'm with you, Lisa. I really am glad that you know, Han helped Chewie get out of the pit, and then they went on to have these adventures together. You know, like he helped him getting his head bashed in the conveyor scene when he got too close to the rocks. And so I like that they become this mutual admiration for each other, and they form a partnership rather than some sort of indentured servitude in place of it. So it worked out much better that way.
And I know Han is sometimes a little bossy with Chewie, but that's just Han's personality. You know, it's just sort of
it's that's what he does.
Yeah, he's bossy with everybody at some point. So he's always yelling at Chewie. No, not that. I didn't say that. Give me that. You know, but Chewie knows Han loves him. He loves Han. You know, they're in it together for the long haul until, you know, sadly the end that I don't want to think about right now. But so that's my take on that.
No, and I'm trying to figure out where the life debt thing was. That in one of the novels, one of the original novelizations, or was it in The Empire Strikes Back?
It came up in a bunch of novels. I remember the last time I remember reading about it was in the New Jedi Order after Chewbacca had died and several members of his clan elected to take up the life debt in his place. And Han freaked out about that, but it came up time and again.
Yeah.
It was just kind of there.
I think of the very first time that came up. I'm going to find out.
I can't think of what the origin of it was. It's because I know it was never mentioned in the films.
No.
So I don't know where exactly. And I read all the EU, but you know, some of it's so long ago that I don't remember what.
When they killed Chewbacca, I swore off the EU for probably about 8 years because I was so put off by that. That made me so mad.
That was rough. Rough.
That was no good. That was no bueno, as they say. All right, Dennis, what's your next one?
Well, I'm going to go with Donald Glover as Lando. Any one of these roles of the characters that we already knew were tricky to cast, but they absolutely nailed it with Donald Glover for Lando. He had the charm. He had the he was streetwise. He had everything that made Billy Dee Lando. Donald captured that in his portrayal. He had a fantastic introduction at the Sabacc table when they were gambling, and his little banter back and forth with Han and mispronouncing his name, and then his obsession with his clothes and the ship and everything else. I just don't know how they could have done any better with that role. And that whole thing kind of culminates after they get to Savareen and Han has completely trashed the Falcon. He walks up and puts his arm around Lando and says, it's a great ship. And Lando says, I hate you. And Han says, I know. So, it's Lando. It's the chemistry he had with Don Glover's Lando and the chemistry he had with Alden Ehrenreich. Even getting on to that final scene where they're gambling and, Han fakes the punch, which we get again in Empire Strikes Back. Just the way they captured everything that is Lando with Donald Glover there was fantastic casting and fantastic acting.
That's a good one. I mean, Donald Glover, my goodness, what can you say? Real quickly, there is a section in Life Debt, the Chuck Wending book. I'm going to read a quick little section from you. I was pulling it up. This is what Han says. I saved him. At least that's what he says. The big fuzzy fool. But really, he saved me. I was on a bad path, and Chewie, he set me straight. Saved my Shanks more than once, too. He said it was part of some life debt. It means that he owes his life to me. He doesn't owe me. I owe him. I got a debt to Chewie to get his home back. So that's kind of their way of trying to smooth out that whole notion that Chewbacca's there against his will. He's not. My fourth one is Kira's introduction on Dryden Voss's ship. For some reason, the way that, she's a great actress, obviously, Emilia Clarke, but for some reason, when he is there and he turns around and he sees her and she's so poised and like she's been there her entire life, when you know everything that she's gone through to get to that point. Well, no, that's not true. We don't know everything she's gone through to get to that point, but we know what we saw in some of the books. We know what happened at the beginning of the film, and now she's just completely coming to her own. She's graceful, she's beautiful, she's powerful, and she doesn't show fear in a very scary, fearsome place. She's very much the calm in the storm that is Han Solo's life. And there are a lot of dark reasons for that that we've just begun to scratch the surface of. But I just think that introduction is really, really something special. And I don't know if I'm going to say she's my favorite female character in all of Star Wars, but she's pretty darn close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was one of the lines on my list as well. I hadn't decided where she ranked, but I did I did like her character arc throughout this movie. You know, she started off as a hopeful figure and ended up kind of someplace tragic.
Yeah.
And
maybe.
Well, maybe. Yeah. As far as we know, but she's she made a very difficult decision. And I guess when I first saw the movie, I'm with you, Dan, I was expecting there to be some sort of a different reveal for her. And I didn't know what that was, but when she just walked up behind Han and put her hand on her shoulders, like, that's just perfect. Because it's not the, the trope of finding, you know, she could have been Infus Nest or something like that. And that would have been, I don't know, I think cheapened things a bit, but it kind of preserved who she was in Han's life the way they did it that way.
And she's also not portrayed as a victim. She's very much shown as someone who has been given a lot of bad cards, and she's taken some certainly questionable paths, but she very much knows what she's doing. And she seems to be, I don't know if she's completely in control, because how can anyone be in control when you're in a life of crime? But she's about as close as it gets. So, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, no, I love Kira. I do. I think she is definitely one of my top female characters in all of Star Wars. I thought Emilia Clarke brought a real grace and beauty to the role. Even on Corellia as a scrum rat, she was still beautiful. I mean, you could see why Han was taken with her. Yeah, I think she's a great character, and I would love to see more of her. Hint: live action series, hopefully.
Most Wanted was such a good book that fleshed out more of the how those two met.
Oh, I love that book.
It's great. It's really great. So let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we will get to the last thing on our list, our official list of the top five things we love about Solo, a Star Wars story, and of course, those honorable mentions will be creeping up as well. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Vanessa Marshall, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
So the word out there on the street is that guys can be hard to shop for, but the good news is that Harry's is the perfect gift. It's difficult to find something that's thoughtful and special, but it's also useful and practical, because, you know, we don't always need another wallet or more socks this year, right? That's why you got to go to Harry's.com and get the Harry's Razor subscription service. They make long-lasting quality products at a super reasonable price. They had a 4.5 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot, and that's because, well, there are many reasons, because one of them is they have German-engineered blades for as low as $2 each. It's a practical gift that he'll actually use, and it saves him money on blade refills. You can also personalize it to make it feel special by choosing a color that's right for him, now with a limited edition holiday handle that includes a personal engraving option. As a special offer for fans of the show, we have partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off any shave set, including our limited edition holiday sets, when you go to harrys.com/CWKFamily. This offer is for new and returning customers and is available only for the holidays. Each Harry's shaving set comes with an ergonomic weighted handle with an option to engrave, German-engineered 5-blade cartridges that provide a close, comfortable shave, foaming shave gel for a rich lather, a travel cover to protect your blade, and a handsome holiday gift box. Or do you just want something for yourself? Redeem a Harry's trial offer to experience the quality of shave before committing. Shipping cutoffs end this week, so act now. Go to harrys.com/CWKFamily right now to get $5 off any shave set while supplies last. That's harrys.com/CWKFamily. People ask me all the time, where do you get that cool Coffee with Kenobi swag? I've got some great t-shirts, I've got some great hoodies, I've even got some amazing coffee mugs, which seems appropriate considering that we are Coffee with Kenobi. Well, that is a great thing for you, because right now TeePublic is having their very last sale of the year, up to 30% off of the great designs that Cory Club created for this podcast that have done so well for us. I mean, they're so instantly recognizable, the bright orange and that great logo of the coffee mug. And it's because of Cory's designs that are on TeePublic. You have $14 tees, $30 crew necks, $15 totes, $8 wall art, $11 mugs. You can even get $2 stickers of the award-winning logo. So be sure to go to our TeePublic store, which there's a link on the show notes every week. And you can go to our webpage, www.coffeewithkenobi.com, and you can click on the image of the mug or the t-shirt and go right to our TeePublic store again for 30% off. There is no time like the present to take care of your Christmas shopping. And who wouldn't want to get a great Coffee with Kenobi t-shirt or a mug under the Christmas tree? We are back, and that vacuum you heard was all the air coming out of Lisa's room because she's on her last one. But be strong.
This was the hardest thing I've had to do in recent memory, is to come up with five things, only five things, that I love about Solo. That was very hard. Because, you know, I wrote a blog about the 20 things.
That's right.
And that was hard enough to come up with 20, all right? You know, to whittle it down. I could come up with 20. I could come up with 1,000. Mm-hmm. But narrowing it down was very hard. So doing this five was...
After our top five, we're going to go into our top 1,000. So we'll have you back for that. It's going to be a 14-hour podcast that no one will listen to. But yeah, we'll do that. Okay, so what is your last one you have on your list?
Okay, my number five is going to be the cinematography by Bradford Young. I think that Solo is a beautiful film. It's visually stunning. It's appealing to my eye. I think it's the most beautiful Star Wars film to date. And I know a lot of people complain about it being dark or poorly lit and all of that stuff. And that was a lot of it was by design. I mean, he used a lot of natural lighting, you know, in set lighting, not big, you know, studio lights, you know, spotlight shining down on everybody. He used whatever was available in set. So like when they're at the lodge at Fort Ipso, it was all whatever lighting would be in the lodge. That's all the lighting that's there for the scene. And he watching some of the behind the scenes features. He talks in there a little bit about how the characters will move in and out of darkness. And he acknowledges that it may be a little bit difficult for the audience to follow that, you know, because you're used to seeing everything, you're not used to things being in the shadows. But he wanted to do that intentionally. And he said, eventually the characters will come back out into the light and you'll be able to see what's going on. But it makes for a very striking film, you know, and I know there were some issues with certain theaters, you know, the quality of the, you know, the screen or the technology or whatever. Some, it looked better in some theaters than others. And I experienced that myself because I went to a wide variety of theaters trying to track down this movie all summer long. And, but I don't really see what people are talking about. I think it's a beautiful movie. I haven't had to make any adjustments on my TV at home. I know a lot of people say they've lightened up their television when they put it on so they can see everything. And like, no, you want to kind of see the shadows. It's sort of a shadowy world.
That's right. Contextually, that's part of the lens you're supposed to look at it through.
I mean, Fort Ipso is supposed to be kind of dark. You know, the lodge is supposed to be dark. I mean, these are sort of the seedy underbelly. They wouldn't all be in flashy lights and like Canto Bight and whatnot, where all the glitterati are congregating.
That's right.
So I think it's appropriate. So
I'd much rather be at Fort Ipso than Canto Bight.
Yes, me too.
That's beautiful because, you know, my son, the oldest, he's going to school and he's fascinated with cinematography. And I should have him on just to talk about that for Solo because, boy, it is like a work of art. It really is. Dennis, what's the last one you have on your list?
Before I get to that, let me just say I can listen to Lisa talk about this movie for hours. I just love how everything just rolls right off her tongue. Right about it. She knows all the details.
It's great.
Yeah. My last one is, and I'm debating between a couple here as to which it's going to be, but I'm going to go with the Darth Maul reveal.
Oh, cool.
A couple reasons. One, I didn't get to see this movie on that Thursday night it came out. I saw it Friday morning with my co-host Darth Taxis, and or afternoon. And I had heard that there was a big reveal at the end of the movie, and I didn't hear what it was, but I was expecting Jabba the entire time, that he was going to be this person Dryden Vos was working for. And it just seemed to make sense because that's who Han gets in trouble with. And, you know, that's the problem in the original trilogy. And so when it turned out to be Darth Maul, I was just completely surprised that they went with that, because you really do have to dive back into the Clone Wars and Rebels and everything to understand that. And I can't tell you how many friends emailed me and said, I have a question about Solo. And I knew exactly what it was before I opened up the email and read the question, because they aren't into Star Wars the way I am and didn't know the history about this. And then the other part of this was, so I got to see it with Darth Taxis, and then I took my family to see it later Friday evening. And when I knew this was coming up, I moved all the way over to the left of my seat, and I just watched my two sons. And the reveal, and it was priceless watching them see Darth Maul show up on the screen. They just got so, excuse me, excited. And, you know, Lisa, when you were talking about taking a snapshot of that scene earlier in the movie, I wish I could pull my phone out and recorded this, but, you know, it wouldn't have come through because it was, you know, just dark in the theater. But just that reveal for them, I'll never forget it. Just how much their jaws dropped and how excited they got.
That was so neat. That, what a cool story. Yeah, I when that happened, when we first saw the hologram, I heard the voice and I thought, oh my gosh, I hope this isn't the Emperor. I don't want him connected to this too. And it wasn't. And when it was Maul, it just sort of all clicked for me too. And I thought, oh, this is great. This is brilliant. They're really tying this into the Clone Wars and Rebels, which is something, of course, they've been so good about doing. Anyway, at the premiere, I got to talk to Ray Park, and I took my picture with him, and he was so friendly, like I'd known him my whole life. And all I thought was, oh, well, there's Ray Park. He's Star Wars royalty. Of course he's there. And then I saw Sam Witwer later, and I thought, oh, well, yeah, he's a big Star Wars fan. Of course they would invite him. And he was talking to Matt Martin, and it didn't really, you know, dawn on me, oh my gosh, these two, maybe they're here because da da da. Because there weren't anyone, wasn't really anyone else there that was in that sort of camp. But then it just sort of made sense. And they were so excited because they got to be back in this world, or, you know, for Sam to actually be, to voice a character, a prominent character, not just a side character, even though that would be amazing too, of course. But you know what I mean? Just to be able to voice Darth Maul or Maul in a Star Wars film. That's it, man. That's the list right there.
Yeah, that's impressive how they kept that under wraps. I mean, I don't think there was a single rumor or anything out there about Darth Maul coming back. And I think it was a pretty gutsy move, too.
Yeah.
The general public is like, wait a minute, he died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, right. Really, put somebody in there that you really have to know the Clone Wars and Rebels to understand how Maul got to be where he is in Solo. Yeah, that was pretty nervy.
Yeah, I was recommending a lot of episodes of Clone Wars to people after this, and telling them where they could find it on Netflix so that they could see how it was that Maul was still alive, because they just watched the movies. They'd never seen any of these television shows. And that was fun. It was, I guess it was clever in that way. I mean, it was confusing for a lot of people. Some people were asking, was Han Solo older than Darth Vader? And so there was some confusion there. But once you explain to them, they're like, oh, that's pretty cool. So
I believe Dan wrote a handy article for IGN.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. When they asked me to do that, because I knew I went to the premiere, it was fun to research him in, you know, that comics, that miniseries Dark Horse did, and then go back and sort of look at his appearances in the Clone Wars. And that was a very well received article, because it is weird. And when it's even for me, like, and I'm sure you're both the same, I have to sit here and think about how old are these characters in this, and how many years is this from that? And we're teaching Star Wars and mythology right now, so I'm having to do a lot of timeline stuff. And sometimes I'll even confuse myself, because wait, how old is Han Solo here? And wait, but wait, he was 3 years here and what now? And yeah, it's interesting. It's, man, what a great universe Star Wars is. Understatement of the year. Mm-hmm. The last one I have is the premiere and getting to meet George Lucas at this thing. I mean, part of the top fives for me is about the memories that these films exhibit and they bring up in our lives. And how can I ever forget that moment? I mean, even as just a fan of cinema, seeing him walk down the red carpet and realizing that he was going to walk right by me and there was not going to be anyone in between us and I was going to get to talk to him. And then seeing him walk into the theater right before they dimmed the lights and everyone gave him a standing ovation. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I'm seeing a brand new Star Wars movie in the theater in Hollywood. And George Lucas is in here with me too. I'd even saying it out loud, it feels like some sort of like I had too much cough syrup or something. It doesn't even seem possible, but it did. It was amazing. Then going to the junket and getting to go to the cast after party and just seeing the things that I saw and talking to people that I did. That will always make this movie very, very special for me. It's those connections, those moments. But honestly, in a similar vein, when I first saw The Force Awakens with Corey and my brother and my kids, and those emotions and those feelings, you know, I'm sure you're both the same way. We remember where we were and who we were with when we saw these movies for the first time, because they have a very visceral reaction to us. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm having a hard time with no new Star Wars film this holiday season. I mean, yeah, I can watch them all on my big screen, and that's great. But there's nothing like that film community experience that we have.
Yeah, there's a big hole this Christmas.
Yeah, there really is.
Star Wars should be where Solo should have been.
Oh, I'm telling you, Solo would have made three times as much money if it came out now.
It would have been. That was a bad release date.
Yep, it was, and they've owned it, and Iger owned it, and I think it's only going to make 2019 and Episode 9 even better. So let's go ahead and take our last break. When we come back, we're going to get to some honorable mentions about the things we love about Solo: A Star Wars Story. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Coffee with Kenobi.
One of the great things about Coffee with Kenobi is some of the travel that I get to do to cover some of these awesome events going on around the world, which is why I love and appreciate MEI and Mouse Fan Travel so much. They have signature service and expert advice to help clients maximize their vacation time and dollar. When I'm going to these events, there's a lot of things I need to focus on and take care of, and MEI makes it so much easier for me to focus on the show because they take care of all the travel arrangements. They help your family enjoy everything the Disney theme parks and the cruise lines have to offer. They help you plan every detail, and they share invaluable tips. Whether you're going to Walt Disney World, Disneyland, New York City, Hollywood, it doesn't really matter where you're going. MEI and Mouse Fan Travel has you covered. They are the official agency of Coffee with Kenobi for all of your travel needs. And be sure to go check them out at www.mousefantravel.com today. And please let them know that Coffee with Kenobi sent you. One Nation Coffee is the official brew of Coffee with Kenobi. I start my morning every day with One Nation Coffee because it is the best. You can start your coffee subscription so you never miss out on the best coffee in the galaxy by going to www.onenationcoffee.com today. Plus, enter the code Kenobi10 to set up a coffee subscription and save 10% off your first order. Here we are, honorable mentions. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them. I think I had 10 for The Last Jedi, but I've got 5 here that I think are good. And we've sort of hit on a lot of key moments throughout this awesome conversation. So, Lisa, you know the drill. We'll go through honorable mentions, just kind of like 1 or 2 sentences about each one and kind of go from there.
Okay. Well, my first honorable mention are my interactions with Ron Howard on social media. I had some fun. It started in May after I went to the press screening of Solo, and Ron Howard posted something on Instagram, and I left a comment saying that I had just seen Solo and I loved it and I thought he did a great job, and he responded to me, and that was really cool. And then all summer didn't hear anything from him. Not that I was expecting to hear from Ron Howard, you know, who am I? But during the month of September, for some reason, I posted a number of things on Instagram about Solo using all my little hashtags and everything else. And for about like a solid week, every other day I would get notifications on Instagram that Ron Howard liked my post. So it was like I had this little collection of all these
things
that Ron Howard liked. I was like, oh, this is cool. I mean, it was just so neat to, I mean, there were no, you know, further discussions between us or anything like that, but just to know that he was seeing how I felt about the movie and how excited I was, and, you know, that I had seen it 20 times and everything else was just, so that was, I got kind of a kick out of that.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then my number two kind of ties in with that. I've met a lot of people on social media that are kindred spirits, you know, with me, that we love Solo and we defend it passionately. And, you know, so I've made some
special cool modifications.
I've made some cool friends on social media because of Solo. So that's been pretty neat. Let me see. My third one is the, which Dennis mentioned earlier about Corellia. I love Corellia. It's one of my favorite worlds now, along with Hoth. I know I've got really weird from Hoth to Corellia. I have very strange worlds that I love, but those are my two favorite environments. I thought Corellia was beautiful on screen, and my favorite opening of all Star Wars movies. And I know Dan, you know, the way Solo opened wasn't one of your favorites, but I love
that. It just,
oh yeah, but it didn't really click for you until Han and yeah. Chewie. You know, where for me, the whole opening sequence on Corellia is my favorite of all the Star Wars films.
Wow.
Yeah, I love it. And let me see. That was, I lost track of what number I was on because I didn't number these. But anyway, on to the next one. I love the pacing of Solo. It moves along at a really good clip. So you watch it and you don't even realize that 2 hours and 15 minutes have gone by. It's, you know, just bing, 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 just from one thing to the next. It's very nice. When you've seen it as many times as I have, you know, it's nice to have a movie that doesn't lag anywhere, in my opinion. It moves along very well. Let me see. And what I have here is my last one is a scene at the end when Han wins the Falcon. And I like how it, after the first time he plays against Lando and Lando cheats. So sort of a fake out. Han thinks he won, but he didn't win. And I think everybody thought, oh, this is when he wins the Millennium Falcon. But then, of course, he doesn't. And then he wins it at the end. And he's got the whole, you know, fair and square, baby, fair and square. I love that. That's a great way to end the movie. And I know Lando looked really sad, but that's what happens when you cheat.
That's right.
Here's never win. So that's it for my honorable mention. See, I kept it.
I'm impressed.
Yes.
That's great. That's great. Dennis, tough act to follow, but I have faith in you.
Oh, thanks. I combined a lot of my items over the course of our top five, but I got a few left. First, Dryden Voss, played by Paul Bettany. I thought Bettany did a great job, especially since he was brought in during the reshoots. As in a late addition, I thought that was a great new character that was added. The scene where Han shoots Beckett, he shoots him before Beckett can set him up with the, you know, there's one last thing. I can't remember exactly what that line was. I'm sure you know what it is, Lisa, but he does let him finish and he gets him because he knows what's coming. And so he picks up that bit of wisdom. And then when Beckett's dying, Han goes up and grabs his hand and Beckett says, you know, smartest move you made. I was going to kill you. That was a great character moment. I like all the expanded universe nods that were in the film.
Mm-hmm.
From, you know, they mentioned Bossk, they mentioned Ara Sing. Kira has, excuse me, exhibits some Tarkassi. There's a mention of Black Spire Outpost. We get the costume that Lando wears in Return of the Jedi. Beckett's wearing that when they get to Kessel and Djarik. Those are just some of the expanded universe nods. Kessel was on my list. Again, this is, you know, a throwaway line from the first movie, you know, the spice mines of Kessel. And here it is. And not what I expected, but I like the way it turned out. Let me see. Well, I could go on, but those were the top of my remaining items that make my honorable mentions.
Never ceases to amaze me that there's, when we do all these top fives, that there's so many things that we just don't even get to because there's, these films are so rich. Lisa, what were you going to say?
Yeah, Dennis just reminded me when he mentioned Kessel. One of the other things that I meant to mention with my honorable mentions, along with Ron Howard and meeting people on social media, are the creature performer details He plays Quay Tolsite in Kessel. He's director Tolsite, the one that Kira takes out with the Teras Kasi. I pronounced that correctly. I've had a lot of interactions with D on Instagram. He was getting a big kick out of my 20 screenings, and he likes all my pictures and comments on a lot of stuff. And when we got our first look at the Quay Tolsite action figure from Hasbro, I think I was the first one that showed him the picture of it. And he was just over the moon excited about that. So that's kind of a neat little thing. And I had one more honorable mention that I noticed here that I wrote down because my handwriting is really messed up. The shower scene. How could I forget the shower scene? I mean, you know, two fine looking men there, Han and Chewie, taking a shower. You know, that's something for the ladies in the audience.
Right. Dirty.
You know, Lisa's Instagram story did remind me of one thing that happened. After I saw Solo, after those two showings on Friday, I tweeted something about how I couldn't wait to go back and see this movie again, that people needed to go see it. The Star Wars Twitter account retweeted that, and it ended up becoming my most successful tweet of all times. I think it was like some 1,200 times and shared over 200. You know, it got a lot of people that are like, yeah, you're right, it's fantastic. And then there was some trolls that came out, of course. But it was a fun experience for that weekend.
That's pretty killer. I love that. So now, just hearing the two of you talk, I added a couple more to my honorable mentions. The first one I have is Moloch. I love this character. I love the design. I love the voice. It's just a classic Star Wars character. And sometimes when you add new characters and creatures or species into Star Wars, it doesn't always click for me. This one felt like he'd been there since 1977. I just love that character. Next, I have Donald Glover's swagger. Dennis, you mentioned that, which is appropriate because you got a little swagger yourself there, buddy.
Thanks.
But Donald Glover is just a cool dude. The way he carries himself on and off screen. So he's perfect for Lando. He said at the press junket that as soon as he knew they were doing this, he told his dad, I've got to get this role. I've got to be Lando. And thank goodness he did. Excuse me. Then I've got the Kessel Run. The Kessel Run is great. You know, another iconic piece of Star Wars, and we get to see it live out, and it shows Han at his best. I love the way that he pilots the Falcon, like the physicality of that. I mentioned earlier how he and Lando team up. It's great. Beckett's pseudo mentorship of Han is certainly not traditional. There's mutual admiration and respect, but he's still a bad guy. And Han, you know, is ready for him. And I'm sure that was not easy, and we didn't really get to see any emotion, internal conflict behind that, because, well, Han wanted to live. But, you know, that's got to be there somewhere. I mean, Han is a big heart, as we know. Paul Bettany's performance, Dennis, you mentioned that. I think I love that character. I love the delicious evilness of him and how he can go from playing a character like The Vision to being Dryden Voss and still sell both roles equally, even though they really couldn't be more opposite of one another. I love how Enfys Nes is one of the key cogs in the origin of the Rebellion. I think I would have liked Enfys Nes even more if someone hadn't spoiled for me that Enfys Nes was a female and what her role is going to be. But that being said, she's still a great character that I'd like to see more of. I like the line, I don't like it, I don't agree with it, but I'll accept it. When Lando is talking with Beckett, for some reason, just the timing of that, the pacing of that line, and the coolness and the fact that he knows he's but still plays it off as I got this is just something that's really endearing to me. And then getting to ask Ron Howard, Alden, Donald, and the Kazan the question of the junket, and the fact that they all chimed in and they all looked at me and commented on, and the day that happened was the day of the 5th anniversary of Coffee with Kenobi. It just was pretty magical. That was just a great weekend. It was pretty great. I want to thank you guys both so much for joining me on the top 5 things we love about Solo, a Star Wars story. Couldn't have ended this entire little arc we've been doing for a couple months here on a better note with two better people. So there are definitely going to be a lot of folks out there who want to chat with the both of you, and they, I'm sure, know how to get in touch with you. But just in case they don't, Lisa, where can people find you on social media?
On social media, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at JediPug1. And I'm also on Facebook. although I'm not on Facebook as much as I used to be, but I am still there. I'm kind of active in some groups, not so much on my own page. Or you can also email me through Coffee with Kenobi at lisad@coffeewithkenobi.com.
Perfect. And on behalf of everyone at Coffee with Kenobi, listeners and Coffee with Kenobi family members, thank you so much for helping to run this ship. It doesn't happen without you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
That's so true. Dennis, what about you?
Well, on social media, you can find me at on Twitter at DJKVER2. You can find my blogs on a monthly basis over on Coffee with Kenobi, which Lisa does a great job getting published. Let's see. My first podcast, Starship Sabers and Scoundrels, is biweekly with a lot of bonus episodes right now. That's part of the RetroZap podcast network. I also write reviews for each one of the Star Wars comics, which are also over on RetroZap.com. And I'm currently on Jedi Journals talking comics each month with Jovial J. Shepherd. So I'm a little bit everywhere at the moment, but I've been keeping busy. Dan, thank you so much for having me for this discussion. It's been a lot of fun. And Lisa, was nice to finally get to talk to you voice to voice.
You too. Hope you feel better.
No, thanks.
Let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, I will share some of your great emails. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are the podcast you're looking for. This is...
Before we get to email, I want to thank our CWK sponsors, TeePublic, One Nation Coffee, Harry's Razors, and Mouse Fan Travel. Please support them the way they support our podcast. And remember to listen to new and archive shows of Coffee with Kenobi wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, Spreaker, Overcast, Blog Talk Radio, Player FM, or our website, www.coffeewithkenobi.com. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, and Tumblr, and we'd love for you to check us out there. Also, be sure to listen to our CWK family of shows, including Legends Library, Resistance Reactions, Comics with Kenobi, and Lattes with Leia. Please leave a review for each of their shows as well, and be sure to subscribe to each of them individually, as they all have their own feeds now. From Matt in St. Louis, thanks for all that you do. I love this show. With your recent episode on Rogue One and all the announcements on upcoming Star Wars projects, I've been wondering just what it takes to be a standalone Star Wars film. I thought you might be a good person to pose this question to. The two standalone films we have so far have been a prologue to Episode 4 and a backstory on two central characters. Not really what I would call standalone in either case. If we take Rogue One as the best example of a standalone film and look closely at it on its own, it looks and feels a lot like Star Wars. But if we replace the Stormtrooper armor with any other military uniform, replace the Force with a religious deity of some sort, and change the Death Star into another sort of secret weapon, then we have any war movie that could take place anywhere, and all without changing the storyline. So what is it that makes something Star Wars? It has to be more than just costumes and the Force, right? But I'm having trouble trying to figure out what it is about the galaxy far, far away that we all love that makes it so special. Thanks, and again, that is from Matt. Well, Matt, that is an excellent question. Thank you so much for your support of Coffee with Kenobi. To me, a standalone film just means something that is not the immediate Star Wars Skywalker saga, which is why Solo and Rogue One fit that bill. They still tie into Star Wars, of course, and meet us with all those great expectations we have for what makes a good Star Wars film. But as far as what makes Star Wars so special, wow, you're going to have to go through 40 years of pop culture and look at that with me, and I'd love to do that. I mean, basically, that's what we do on this show. That's what so many other great Star Wars podcasts and blogs do. There's a lot, and Matt, I'd like to know what you think. I mean, yes, costumes and the Force are a big deal, but it's the characters, it's the themes, it's the memories, it's the moments, it's what these stories do, how they bind our pop culture together, because they show us so many things we love and we prize about not only our society, but what makes us better people. And I think Star Wars is a great catalyst for that, looking at the growth of Luke, Han, Rey, Poe, Finn, Rose, so many great Star Wars characters, kind of where they come from and where they get to and the journey that gets there. That's another big thing that makes Star Wars so special. And, of course, lightsabers. Matt, thanks again so much for your great email. I want to thank Dennis Keithley and Lisa Diller for joining us today on Coffee with Kenobi. In addition to the places I just mentioned for Coffee with Kenobi, you can find me twice a month on the podcast Looking at Lucasfilm, part of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network, and I know we haven't had a show for a couple weeks now, but Jim and I are going to record one very soon, so be on the lookout for that. You can also find me on Twitter at Mr. Zehr, M-R-Z-E-H-R, and you can find my writings on CWK's website, as well as StarWars.com and IGN. Thanks again for joining us, and don't forget to check out www.patreon.com/coffeewithkenobi to help support this show, as well as get access to podcasts not heard anywhere else, including CWK Pour Over. There are also t-shirts, coffee mugs, and so much more. 12 days until Christmas. Can you believe that? I cannot wait. It's my favorite time of the year, and one of the great reasons it's so much fun for me is sharing coffee with Kenobi and Star Wars conversation with each and every one of you. Looking forward to chatting with you all next time. This is the podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi, unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here.